CliffCentral.com. All right. Good morning, everybody. It's Wednesday morning. Mash and Ryan are in the studio, and we are live. Hope you're having a good start to your Wednesday. We've got lots to get into today. We've also got a special guest podcast play out later on, which I think you're going to really enjoy. I get to talk to somebody who I wasn't expecting to even meet, and she is absolutely fascinating and has a story that will make the hair on the back of your neck stand up. Her name is Martha Ngwai, and she is a whistleblower. She's an attorney, but she worked at PRASA for a long time, and before that at Transnet. And she has seen corruption from the inside, and she's one of those rare people who managed to stand up for herself and to stand up for taxpayers and to stand up for the right things in South Africa. And I have such respect for her, but you can hear it all yourself a little bit later on. It's really, really an interesting conversation. How are you doing, Mash? How are you doing, Ryan? How are you guys?
Oh, we are good, Gareth. We are good.
Mash says, stumbling into the studio. No, we're good. How's things here?
Well, you two are good, but first of all, let me give you a compliment. Like, there were a couple of guests in the last few weeks, and they're both like, wow, your staff is so polite. But they met, I think, you guys and Lebang. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that all the others would have been polite as well. But you guys are like, right. Hi, my name is Ash. And they love that. They're like, the guests are so impressed when someone's polite, because they're so used to, I suppose, people just moping around with their like shoulders down and looking at the floor. You know, because people don't know how to like present themselves very well anymore. So
yeah,
at least three of our guests that I've spoken to in the last while are like, wow, you've got such lovely, friendly, polite, nice staff. Wow,
that's
yeah, we
true,
do.
Gareth. Most companies, you know, there's front-facing staff and then there's staff who are in the back, the people who work in the engine room, and they never are allowed to actually see light, well, interact with guests more than anything. So
here
at Cliff Central, everybody is like a flight attendant. Everybody is client facing. And we have to look good, and we have to also, of course, be polite. It's something that we pride ourselves in, right? Right, Ryan?
Yeah, well, you see, how we used to behave is very Rivonia like. Now we're in Sandton. You know, it's a step up now.
Now we're in Sandhurst.
Now we're rubbing shoulders with the big boys. We got to be on the same level. When you walk into the Discovery building, they don't give you shit. They take your name, offer you coffee.
Well,
to some people. To some
depend.
People. What plan are you on?
This is also why I like where we are and I like what we're doing and the size of our business and everything, because everybody meets everybody, right? There are hardly any meetings that if you're in the office, you'll be part of at least saying hello and at least meeting everybody. And I think that's cool, because then you know exactly who you're dealing with when you talk to us.
Absolutely.
And they meet Jane first, so that's a big compliment as well.
That's a good one, yeah. And listen, Jane has been working harder this year than she's ever worked. I mean, she's making coffee and she's running around and she's taking
the
care.
Move going. Yeah.
Oh, she did everything. She's on fire. Anyway, so you two, despite the fact that you're so good with guests, you seem to be kind of a little shocked by each other. First of all, Ryan is one of the people, Mash, who's a bit concerned that your partner has added you as a beneficiary on one of his policies already. Already.
Oh, yeah, Hold on. Gareth, we have to break this down, because Mash comes into the office the other day. Now we're all sitting around and he drops this bomb on us like it's a normal thing. He's like, oh, by the way, I just got added to my partner's, life. What's it? Life insurance? Or is it, what policy is this?
It's just a policy.
Everyone in the office is like gobsmacked, because the dude has family and a bunch of
Mash
other things.
Like, Mash is- just a policy, right? It's not a big deal. It's just a policy. But Mash, I mean, it is. How long have you two been seeing each other?
About 2 months.
Okay.
Come on.
You don't think that's a bit soon?
There's nothing soon about anything. I feel like I think that everything has its time and everything happens at the right time. So if something happens after 2 months, 6 months, 2 years, either way, I think there's a time for everything. Yes, people in the office might not understand. You know, Lebang doesn't understand either. But all I think is that everything has its time. And this was the time for this to happen. And yeah, what other concerns do you have about...
No, look, first of all, it's nobody else's business. So they have no right to be involving themselves in this. But you shared it. So now we're all allowed to have an opinion. Right. So this is the problem. The same as social media. You can't get upset if people start delivering comments on things on social media if you're the one who shared it. So, I mean, I would normally say, Mash, good for you. Do whatever. It's your relationship. You owe us no explanation. Move on with your life. But now that they know, they're all going to have something to say. What do you have to say about this, Ryan? Climb in.
I'm just like, I'm no expert, but 2 months in and you're already on like a life insurance policy? Skeptical, you know?
So let me tell you what inspired this.
Skepticism.
Let me take you right from the top. And shout out to Famous Mama. Because Famous Mama was on the show, I believe, on Friday, sharing that she woke up next to her dead husband, who was 39 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing is, my partner is also within that age group. So after listening to that show, my partner is like, whoa, I'm in that age group too. So I also have to be covered, you know? And the thing is, especially in Black families, unless you're married to someone, you are not recognized. We saw this before when other celebrities passed away and who passed away where this happened again? Was it Ricky Rick's family? But they were like, look, you guys never actually got legally married, so you can't claim anything.
Oh, it was Ricky Rick's family.
You have no claim over anything because you never got legally married. So I have never wanted such a situation. Whether we're dating, whether we're engaged, whatever the situation is, as long as we're not married, I want to be covered.
Your partner decided to do this and then only told you after it already happened.
No. It was a discussion. It was a discussion and it was based around that conversation on Friday where Famous Mama was like, yo, my partner passed away. And, and my partner is in that age group. And my partner was like, yo, I might be vulnerable to such things. I'm in that age group. I need to make sure I'm covered. And I don't want a situation where if I were to pass away, you literally just walk away with nothing. Sure. It's as if nothing ever happened. My family doesn't recognize you and you get nothing. So it is best that you can actually contribute to my funeral.
It's very sensible. Mm-hmm. Makes a lot of sense. And I do think that that's, you know, especially as a result of like a conversation that happened on the show, which I thought was fascinating last week. You know, Famous Mama wakes up and her partner's dead in the bed next to her. I mean, it could happen to anyone. Only thing we're worried about, Mash, is that, you know, sometimes when people take out policies on somebody and then that something happens to that person and they get a whole lot of money, you know, it's a bit suspicious. Just saying.
Conga Chris is already in the comments talking about that.
No.
And that's, we don't and that's want to, the thing.
We don't want to find you, we don't want to find you murdered.
Yes. So,
that's all.
Yeah.
Just watch. Or the other way around, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, yes, exactly, Mash. Keep your house tidy, you know, no crazy business. All right. Listen, if you've got something to say about this, as with every other thing that goes into the comment section, you can also drop us a phone call if you want to, 083-295-5769. We will take some of those calls this morning. We want to hear from you. It's because of a call last week that this even happened. So we want to hear from you. 083-295-5769. Got to have a 6-9.
We've had some good calls lately.
We always have good calls.
Yeah. It's a nice new avenue, you know?
Absolutely.
All right. So a few comments. Sorry, I just want to get to these. McGill says, morning, guys. I included my girlfriend in a Provident Fund in 1998. We married 19 years now. We've been married 19 years now. Well, that's terrific. So you guys, basically, that policy will take care of whichever one of you is around. And I think that's a very sensible thing, you know?
How long into the relationship did he take it out? Was it in the realm of 0 to 3 months or was it like...
Well,
6 months.
She was still his girlfriend, and that was back in 1998. So So, I mean, they're still together, which is shows either that these two have an incredible, they're both very good judges of character because they knew they'd be together for a long time, which is amazing. I mean, so, listen, Ryan, you know, we could be cynical about this, but there are some people who, when they meet, they just know, like, this is my person. This is me. I'm going to be with this person forever. This is terrific. Hey, good morning.
Morning. How is everyone?
Good, good. Who's this?
I can only try to anonymous.
Okay, go for it, anonymous.
So something happened to me 2 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
There's this lady. She's one of my clients. So this business I'm running on the side.
Mm-hmm.
So we've known each other for like 2 years, and mm-hmm. she called me the other day, the night before. She said, "Hey, Maps, can you pass by my house in the morning? I need you to put out your signature on my updated will." I'm like, why me? Because she has family, she has friends. Why does she want me to put my signature as a witness? Okay, then I went in the morning. When I checked here, or where I have to put my signature, mm-hmm. it's written my name under the line where I have to put my signature. It's printed my name.
But does it say witness or does it say beneficiary?
It says witness. It's her mom and me. I'm like,
but that,
why me?
Well, because you can't have people who are going to benefit from the will signing as a witness.
But why do I have to sign as a witness? She has family and friends.
You want someone who's not related to the situation. I wouldn't be too suspicious, dude. I don't think this is a big deal. Like, I think it's actually kind of normal. Like sometimes I'll ask whoever is around in the office to witness something for, you know, a client contract or whatever. That doesn't mean that they are now suddenly responsible for, you know, seeing through that contract and making sure that our provisions are met or blah, blah, blah. They've just witnessed that I signed it. That's all.
Oh, she just trusted me.
Yeah. Well, she does. It's not a, really, she's just needed someone to sign, and she needed someone who's not going to be a beneficiary or whatever else in the will. Mm. She wanted an outsider. Don't stress. They're not trying to trap you in anything.
All right, I hope so. I was a bit worried.
Don't worry about it.
Have a good day.
All right, dude. There we go. You see, we're also here to help you with your legal queries.
Absolutely. So in that case, right, if something were to happen to that relationship, nothing would, in terms of the legalities of the witness, nothing would happen. They would still just have to be involved if something were to happen and the witness needed to be called out.
Would
they need to redo the process again with someone else?
So the reason his name was included in this is because if someone says that this will is not real, that it was made up, that it's a forgery, or that they've, they want to check that in the case of a will, that it is your last will and testament. So if someone has a dispute, like, oh no, you know, when my mother died, there was a fake will and actually I meant to inherit everything. What they can do then is track this guy down because his name is written there and he signed it and say, hey, did you sign this will? And was there any funny business? And that's about it. And he'll go, no, I signed it on this day at this time. That's all I know. And they'll go, okay, well, that's all. So it's just a witness. It's literally someone who's seen it done. That's all.
The thing with a witness is it can literally be anyone. You can even pick someone from off the side of the street.
You could, yeah.
That's just how it is.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Shame. There he was, probably thinking he was important.
He's like, oh, look at me. Look at me. Oh. Meanwhile, Joe could have been anyone.
Sizi says, you don't have to be anonymous. We can't see your face and you can pick any name you want. Well, that's also true. You know, that if you are nervous to call us, you can just make up a name. I mean, like, how are we going to know? It's not like we're asking you to witness. We're not asking you to witness our policies.
He must have been caught a bit off guard with that, right? I mean, that's not I don't know. Is it a regular thing? Do you have to have a family member and someone else out, or can you just have two family members? This is something I know nothing about, by the way. Sorry, I'm just asking.
For what? For a policy?
Yeah.
Or a will?
Or a will.
Yeah, like for a will.
Right. Like, you can't sign if you're going to inherit, even if it's a teapot from your mom and dad. All right. Then you shouldn't be a witness on the will.
Yes.
Right.
To your family.
And the beneficiary of a will probably doesn't need to be even aware of it, because it's the job of the executor of the will to find the beneficiaries and give them what they meant to get from the will. So they don't sign it. You don't sign as a beneficiary. I mean, it just happens. Right. But the witnesses, they can't inherit, because they're just there to make sure that people know that this will was done on this day at this time. That's all.
Cool. They only have one job.
Right. And it's an easy job. That's why anyone, as Nash says, someone off the street can do it. Does nobody remember that police lady that policy murdered her extended family and complete strangers? Yeah, this is a...
Rosemary Ndlovu.
That's correct. That was her name, Rosemary Ndlovu. Now, that was a big story in South Africa, because we know people have policies, right? And the reason people have policies is often to pay for funerals and, you know, to cover the expenses at the end of life and all that kind of thing. And it's a big deal in South Africa. And there are probably a lot of crooks and psychopaths out there who will use these things to, you know, benefit themselves, make some money on the side. They'll do whatever it takes to get some free cash, free in inverted commas. So yeah, they're going to be crazy people who do this, but it's very rare. And usually the insurance companies or the life policy companies that actually put out these policies, they will check all of this stuff. So they will make sure that the people who are benefiting from this didn't have anything to do with any suspicious deaths or anything like that. I mean, they investigate. They've got whole teams of investigators that are probably way better than the police at actually figuring out what happened. Because they used
to. Remember in Devil's Dope when that one guy faked his death, and then the person from the insurance company was actually doing an investigation, and he went that spiky head lady, the devil lady, and she was the beneficiary of his will. And this guy was like, wait, this guy has kids. He has a wife. Yep. How can he skip all these people and give everything to this crazy lady who lives in some flat in Devil's Dorp or in Kruger's Dorp? Sorry, Ryan. Yeah, it was very, very...
I don't live there. I don't know why you're saying sorry.
You are in the West Rand. I mean, it's the same thing, right? Devil's Dorp, Kruger's Dorp, potato, potato. Right. So Mash, I love these stories from like what goes on behind the scenes. Mash discovered to his horror that Ryan does not use lotion and that he's never bought his own shampoo.
Now, shocked.
He put it out of context like that, right? So the thing is,
Don't let it be said we always talk like politics, heavy philosophy. Like we also talk about lotion and shampoo on the show. There's three men in the studio and we're talking about this.
Yeah, this Mash brought this up. I was just saying on the weekend, right? I went shopping. I had to go do one of these, you know, this discovery exams or whatever to get your points.
Vitality checkups
and things. I don't know if you've ever done one.
Exams, yeah.
Discovery exams.
Yeah, like it's. It's new to me, but I had to go and do it, and I've been putting it off for months, but I went and did it. And I was walking through Dis-Chem, and I was like, damn, this place really has like a lot of shampoo. Like I've only ever used the same one my whole life, like since, you know, from growing up, and I've only ever bought the same one. And so now I'm walking across this aisle, and I'm like, damn, there's so many shampoos though. And I had to switch it up because I'm looking for this shampoo that doesn't have a certain chemical, and I forget what it is, that makes you lose hair now, because now that's my life. And so I found this. So now I had to like Google a bunch of these different brands. I eventually found one, but I was just...
While you're in the shop, you're actually standing there with your phone and you're busy Googling like which brands don't have these, whatever the chemical is.
Yes. I forget this name of the chemical. Somebody said I must watch out for it. But I've only ever used the same one my whole life. And so I was opened up into a whole new world of product, should I say.
So you've been to the shop. You've been to the shops before. You've just never noticed.
Yes. Mash is like taking it out of proportion.
So how Ryan explained it previously was that, look, I actually bought my own shampoo for the first time, and I saw so many shampoos. I didn't realize there's so many shampoos. I was like, what do you mean you just bought your own shampoo? He's like, no, usually I just find shampoo at home. You know, my mom just buys it. It's just there. I just go in the shower and it's already there. And I was so surprised by this. I was so shocked. I was like, how have you been surviving? So you just always
shampoo. It's just like I use the same one the whole time. And I was like, damn, but there's so many. And they have, and there's like one brand that has like six different functions. They have like six different bottles.
All right. Well,
they have different functions.
Certainly since, I don't know, since probably the last 12 years or whatever, I've used the same shampoo. I go to the shop. I'm not experimental about this either. I'm not going to try 10 different ones. I use the same one. Comes in a big ass bottle like this.
It's the big ones, right?
Exactly. I'm sure you press it.
No, this one you actually have to like tip upside down and it's got a little thing on the lid. But anyway, I mean, It's the same shampoo for the last 12 years. I don't need to check others out, test them. I've found mine. I'm just going to stick to it. And I think probably a lot of guys are like that. They just don't care enough about it. Once you find your stuff, you just stay with it. I'm not sure if that works for everybody. There are some people who they love to try this one and try that one. And maybe I'm missing out. Maybe there's some really good ones that I don't know about. I'm happy to just forego that.
Just when last did you go through like an aisle and like actually really look? Because that's a whole new thing for me. Well, you know,
see, I don't shop like that. So again, I mean, I'm sure there are lots of people who would rather. I mean, Mash, you seem to me like someone who would try a bunch of different things until you found the one you wanted, and then you would probably if someone said to you, "Oh, try this one," you'd be open to trying another one.
100%.
Yeah, I'm like. Once I find mine, I'm just going to stick to it. And unless it's, you have to do this, then I probably won't.
Yeah.
My thing is, as you just described, Gareth, I've tried many different types of shampoos. I've tried every single one. The one that works for me turns out is an anti-dandruff one from some other brand. So that was actually awesome. And it's like lotions as well. You know, you have to try different ones until you find the right one. What's working for me now is coconut oil. You know, it's just keeping my skin buttery smooth and all of that. So you just have to try different ones until you find the right one. And once you find
you know, your skin can't possibly get any better. You use the coconut oil. You use the blood cleanser. Here's David says, does Mash need shampoo or does the blood cleanser help with clean hair? I mean, that's a good question.
What I'm saying is I hope you don't buy your shampoo at the same place where you get that blood cleanser thing.
I don't yet, but eventually one day I will. One day I definitely will.
You know why I have been experimental is with cologne, what would you call it?
Yes.
You know, like that stuff. I mean, again, it's expensive as hell. But if you go, like when I go overseas, I might try a new one duty-free at the airport because you've got time to kill in these airports. Then I'll go around, smell a bunch of different ones, go, I like that one. I don't like this one. I mean, there are thousands of these things. So you could get completely confused. And also they are pretty pricey. So I found like what I do is only when I go overseas do I buy, and I'll buy one kind and I'll stick to that for a while and, you know, change it up once I get bored. But I don't have a set kind of cologne that I use every day. I don't use the same.
You don't have a signature?
No. I also think that everybody thinks that people will remember that, but people don't.
Nobody gives a shit.
No, nobody does. It's for you more than it is for anyone else. You want to smell nice. You want to feel good. So you try different. Now I've got quite a lot because over the years I've collected them. Some of them there's only this much left in the bottle. Some of them are still pretty full. So I'll just, sometimes I look at them and go, well, which one's the most full? And I'll use that one. That's all. But none of them are shit because if I wouldn't have spent, because they all are expensive, right? They're no cheap ones. Mm. So you look at them and you go, I'll use the one that's most full because it's going to be good. One of these is going to be good. So I'm the only one who knows what it is. So let me vary it, try it up, change it up every day.
Are you influenced by marketing at all? Like if you see a cool ad, like those Old Spice ads, I see in the comments, I'm saying Old Spice. Old Spice.
No, my dad used to. My dad used to use. I don't know if he still does Old Spice, but no, I wouldn't use Old Spice. But I don't really like when it comes to ads, because I do think that different skins smell different with different like scents and colognes. So you actually have to try this stuff. That's why it's good when you're stuck on like a long flight or you're at the airport. It's a good time to like check this stuff out, you know, and then you've got time to go, yeah, I like that. And then you walk around a little bit and you check it again and you're like, okay, that's one I'm going to buy. So that's what
When I was in college, I used to collect those little samples and I'd keep them on me just walking through the hallway because I was like, you don't want to take out a big bottle because everyone kind of just looks at you funny. But if you have the little ones, you could be discreet.
So I'll keep one. Like I've got a few cheaper ones and I'll put one of those bottles into the gym bag and then I'll take that because you don't know when you're going to end up at gym and you get out of there and you need something. So
you
have the cheaper things for those reasons. I mean, it's never a bad idea to have something like that around you all the time, right? But lotion is, so Ryan, I do have to explain to you, like, and I would get Mash to do this, but I'm actually kind of proud that I know this. So I have lots of friends and lotion is a big deal to Black people because a lot of their moms and grandmothers have told them that if they don't put on the lotion on, especially the elbows and things, it'll get a bit ashy and it's very embarrassing and nobody wants to be ashy and no one wants to have like, scratchy, crabby, nasty skin. Mm-hmm. And a lot of white people don't think about this because it doesn't show up as much on the white people as it does on the Black people when they have like ashy elbows and stuff. So a lot of white guys don't really give a shit about lotion and they realize much too late in their lives that they haven't looked after their skin and then they look like an old piece of biltong.
Yeah, they look like leather.
And Lebang said to me a while ago, and I've heard this from other friends of mine too, that the reason Black don't crack is because Black people are better at moisturizing than white people. That's just the truth. Mm. They pay attention to this thing.
It is very important to moisturize. The thing with moisturizing, and I have lots of friends in the beauty industry, in the spa industry and all of that, and they always say that, look, I have clients coming in who didn't moisturize when they were 20, but they only start seeing it at 35. This is because all the results actually show up at least 10 years later.
That is exactly right. And I'll tell you what, if you're listening to us this morning and you're in your 20s, like now is the time to, especially your face. You know, because your face is the first thing people see. And if you've got a craggy, nasty, saggy, cracked, ugly, weathered old face, I mean, especially if you have that, you think it's not going to happen when you're in your 20s and even your 30s. You're like, it's one day I'll do that stuff when I'm in my 40s and 50s. I promise you it's going to hit you soon. And you will look older than you should at a very young age. So get into that shit now. Whether you're a guy or a girl, doesn't matter. You have to look after your skin.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We agree on this one. Mm-hmm.
So there's something that's actually been trending on Twitter. I mean, not Twitter, actually TikTok, that I've been noticing. And basically it's people quitting their jobs and then posting videos of themselves just saying, I did it. I did it. They're actually proud of themselves. And then you'll see people in the comments going like, congratulations, finally, you know, and it's all based on mental health. So people are quitting their jobs because of mental health. There's actually quite an influx of this. And they're sharing videos on TikTok, on Twitter, wherever. And it's quite a big deal right now. You know, mental health is very important in the workplace. And as the job market continues to boom, there's still millions of workers leaving their jobs each month, despite talk of slow economy, of the slow economy and recession as well.
I mean, I agree with you up to what you said about the economy's booming because it's certainly not booming here. And unemployment in South Africa is a big problem. So it's slightly different to America. But yeah, there are people. And what do you guys think of this, first of all? Because I've almost got like a policy in my head about how this should work.
What about quitting?
If you hate your job and you're having a terrible time and you're not enjoying it, it's not good for your mental health. Like let's say you're overworked or you are unstimulated or worse, you have an abusive boss or you are, you know, your colleagues make your life a misery, that kind of thing. If you are in that situation, are you brave enough to say, you know what? I'd rather go out there and start again, find a new job. Maybe earn a whole lot less. Maybe you know, have to go through all that difficulty of like making, you know, the start from scratch thing. Oh, I've got to get to know these colleagues. I've got to get to know a new workspace, all of that stuff. And it, for some people, it's more traumatic to go through that stuff than it is to just stick to the job. But how do you feel about this? How do you guys feel? What would you do?
So actually, a lot of people don't know this, but although I've been working towards being on podcasting or radio and things like that most of my life, I actually worked straight out of varsity. There was no work in this industry. Like, I applied for years. Mm-hmm. And so I actually did health and safety for 7 years.
Oh.
I was an operations manager for my cousin's company. And so I would consult. I'd rock up to clients' factories, mainly in the East Rand. I would travel very far. And I remember my cousin telling me, you know, the one thing about being a health and safety, it's not officer, I forget the actual name. It's been about 2 or 3 years. But when I'd rock up, he always said, "Ryan, I just want to let you know that this is probably one of the loneliest jobs because firstly, no one wants you around. You know, you have to get people to comply, but you have to get the job done. So you've got to take control." You know, I also used to do, I haven't said half these terms in so long, but I used to do a bunch of different things at the different factories. So I'd have to go actually work on the ground, but I'd also work in the CEO's offices and do all of that stuff. And I like
to walk around in a helmet.
Hard hats. I had to have the boots.
And the vest.
Yeah, and the vest.
Oh, yes.
And so it was like different situations. There were construction sites, and it's like funny because I'm driving through Santon now.
And she's like, "Oh, yes."
And I'm like driving through Santon now, and I can see half these buildings. I used to do the health and safety for their offices. I mean, I did the health and safety for the McDonald's in Cosmo City, like when they were still building it. I had to go meet with the builders and check out the plans, make sure they had all their files in place, and do audits and all of their. And that made really good money. But deep inside, I always really wanted to do this. Like, this was, I studied music and I studied, you know, I did some radio work in high school. I mean,
because there's a difference.
I
think what you're talking about is hard work and a hard job. But I think, you know, a lot of people have done that, but it's been quite challenging and interesting. And it wasn't your first choice, but you weren't suffering. You said it was a lonely job, but you weren't like suffering every day and getting home and like crying in your sleep.
So there were days I'd be very frustrated. So I would come back and I'd be like, "You know what? I really hate this." But there was no alternative. I had to work. I had to make money. And so I just had to push on with it. And then there was one day an opportunity opened up. You know, I'd still been applying every day. I was still looking on LinkedIn and applying and just hoping there was something. And, you know, that was when I worked on the old show. And I decided to leave everything because also my cousin left the country. So I decided to not go on my own. And I came and started doing this. And I have no regrets about it because I'm a lot happier now. But, you know, obviously the money's a lot different because if you're in the construction industry, it's a lot more money. But I have no regrets about it. I love what I do now. But I had to do those 7 years because it was just, there was no work back then, you know?
Ryan, that's very
fascinating. And Matt, how about you?
So I've quit, not too many jobs, a couple, just because of the work situation. One of the jobs I quit, I was actually marketing manager, and I was doing campaign management for some other app. And that was fun in the beginning, but then it became a toxic work environment because people are just turning against me because I was the youngest person. I was calling the shots and people don't like that. Mm-hmm. People in their 30s don't like a freaking 23-year-old telling them, "Yo, what the hell are you doing?" You know, nobody likes that. So, the marketing of the app was an absolute success. I'm not going to say what app it was.
You did a great job. But you quit. They didn't fire you. You just decided you'd had enough.
I quit because, Bona, working with these people was very difficult. They made my life actually very difficult. There was this constant air of trying to sabotage MASH. Everybody was against MASH in meetings. People, MASH goes right. Everybody wants to go left. But then what gets executed? My damn plan. So that's what always happened in this work environment. And then eventually I just ended up leaving. I was always complaining and I was also working ridiculous hours. I was waking up at 5 a.m. to go to gym and then I'd knock off. My meetings would always end at like 2 a.m. because I'm planning rollouts. I'm planning rollouts, not just of the campaign, social media, of so many different elements of this as well. Getting a print done as well. I was doing so much, a complete 360.
I mean, like, people have got this idea that your job has to be fantastic all the time. It doesn't matter who you are. Everybody on earth has things about their job that they hate. And sometimes you have to do 24-hour days. Sometimes you have to do, you know, things that you don't want to do as part of the job. But
yes,
I reckon, like, you also have to stand up for yourself. And, you know, Rena always talks about the law of 2 feet. Like, you could use your 2 feet and walk out of the door anytime you want. And you just, if you're not happy, the person who should say that first is you. You should be bold enough. And I know a lot of people are worried because they think, well, how am I going to pay my bills? What am I going to do if I can't find a new job? You have to have a little bit of self-confidence, probably a lot of self-confidence. I think you've got to stand up for yourself. MASH and Ryan, you were both talking about how, Ryan, you said you were lonely, and MASH, you said that these people you were working with weren't very nice to you. If those things become so unbearable and those people make your life so horrible that you actually would rather not be going into that job, you've got to quit. You've got to trust that you will find something, that you have talent, that you have ability, that you have experience. You will find something new because the bravest people are the ones who quit. The sad ones are the ones who wait to get fired. You know, I mean, that's a whole lot worse. Imagine you just sitting around waiting for someone to fire you. It's horrible. This is a guy, I saw this is in the news this week, a Twitter employee who has appealed to Elon Musk on Twitter to ask whether or not he's been fired. So in a tweet from the firm's executive, a guy said, "Your head HR is not able to confirm if I'm employed or not." So Musk responded to this. You imagine this guy's not sure whether or not he's got to go into work today because he used to work at Twitter, but now he's not sure. So he puts it on Twitter and he says, "Hey, Elon Musk, am I fired or do I still work for you?" So he responded and said, "What work have you been doing?" So he said, 9 days after being frozen out of Twitter's accounts, he didn't know whether he'd been fired or not. After a series of follow-up questions and answers with Mr. Musk that read like a live interview for his job, Mr. Thorleifson said he received an email confirming that he had been fired. Yeah. I mean, how's this? You have to ask your boss on Twitter whether or not you've been fired or not. I wonder if people have ever done that in South Africa. And obviously, that's just
shocking.
No, you couldn't ask Elon Musk for Twitter, but maybe you've asked your boss on social media if you've been fired.
I actually saw that thing roll out. Like, it was quite entertaining because a lot of people thought Elon Musk was just being an asshole about it. Like, you know, what do you do? But the thing is, you don't keep tabs on every employee, I'm assuming. I mean, you know, so I feel like it's only fair to ask these kind of questions. But then, you know, if you read Elon's response as well, he said, "We haven't asked for designer work in 4 months. We haven't asked for half the stuff you've been doing. So what, you know, how are you not, how do you know you're still not working here?" So that it was a weird conversation. You have to go find it. It's not that hard to find. It got like 11 million views.
Whoa.
That tweet.
That is insane. Well, no, I'm going to actually go look for that.
He said, "It's extremely stressful." This is now the employee. "This is my retirement fund, a way to take care of myself and my family. Having the richest man in the world on the other end of this potentially refusing to stand by contracts is not easy for me to accept." Last month, Elon Musk appeared to fire another 200 Twitter employees. It means that Twitter now has just over 2,000 workers, which is down from 7,500 in October. That's amazing.
That's and it's easy. Still running, you know?
It's got to suck, though, to find out on the social media on platform. Twitter.
On the platform.
So, I don't know if you've heard about this, but this is something that Gary Hertzberg sent us to talk about on the show. I think this is amazing. So here's a story in the news from IOL. Guest told to leave wedding because she couldn't pay for the expensive dinner and wanted McDonald's instead.
What do you mean guest couldn't pay for the expensive dinner? What does that mean?
Let me explain this. So a Reddit's full of incredible and crazy stories, right? So a Reddit user was a guest at a wedding. So you imagine you're a guest at the wedding. You're told that there's no guest fee, but was in for a nasty surprise when she got to the reception. So she took to the Reddit group to share her embarrassing and infuriating experience, said the following. Before attending a colleague's wedding, she asked if there was any guest fee. Now, I've never heard of a guest fee at a wedding. Have you?
No, I've never.
No.
Maybe in the West Rand.
No.
Right. So the bride-to-be responds to her email and says, no, you don't have to pay me anything. However, on the wedding day at dinner time, she was presented with a wedding menu that had prices on it. Everything was ridiculously expensive, including the vegetarian options, she said. At first, I wanted to question her because, well, she lied to me that I didn't have to pay for anything. But it was her wedding, and I didn't want to spoil her day by embarrassing her in front of everyone. Because she hadn't taken enough money with her to the wedding, she couldn't afford to pay for dinner, so her option was to not eat at all. However, there was a McDonald's close to the venue, and she thought she could simply pop out for a quick bite during a wedding. As tactfully as I could, I asked the bride if I could make a quick stop at McDonald's as I didn't bring enough money for the reception meal. So she asks her, right? I said that I'd be back in time for the gift ceremony and the cake. This did not go down well with the bride. I thought she'd agree, but to my horror, she got really upset. She said that she'd put in so much effort to get this Michelin star restaurant service, yet I wasn't happy. That I was trying to bring her down by saying that I'd rather eat McDonald's. After explaining to the bride that she felt that she was lied to, the bride responded, what I meant is that there's no attendance fee. You literally assumed you'd get a 5-course dinner. Wow, you're cheaper than I thought. The bride then asked her to leave the wedding. She did leave, and she did grab a Big Mac on her way home. Do you think she was an asshole for not wanting to pay for her dinner and grabbing McDonald's instead? Or is the bride a bridezilla for expecting her guests to pay for an expensive dinner?
So the bride called Miguel cheap, even though the bride couldn't afford to pay for the damn catering, is what you're telling me.
Yeah. So
she couldn't pay for catering.
I've never heard of this in my life. Have you ever been to a wedding where you had to pay for a dinner off a menu?
No.
I've never been to anything like that. And I will not be attending anything like that. If you invite me somewhere, right. And as soon as I get there, I'm given a menu with prices and I have to pay for something. I am standing up immediately and I am leaving. Or I am straight up going to ask you in front of all your guests that, oh, so you invited us here to pay? Is that why you invited us here?
Yes.
That's one thing I cannot stand. And it's something that I'm always arguing about in the office. I even argued with Simpiwa about it as well, because she was like, oh yeah, I was invited to my friend's birthday party. She even showed us an invitation where they have to RSVP at some restaurant and then they have to pay for their own meals. I was like, then why the hell do you have to RSVP if you have to pay? There's no point in that. It doesn't make sense. And I'm sure you actually had to RSVP as well for this. Why am I RSVPing? So I can pay for the meal?
I went to a wedding where I had to bring my own chicken. So, you know.
Yes. So in other words, this bride must be from the West Rand.
Sounds a bit like it, but no, I've never been to a wedding where it's been like fancy food served that I've had to pay for. And I don't think she's out of her. I also would have left. If they're making you look like an asshole for not paying, I would also happily just go to the drive-thru.
I'm with Mash. 100% on this one. If you invite someone to your wedding, they probably have to bring you a gift as well. Now they must also pay for their meal.
Some people are traveling from far even. I'm really doing you a damn favor and I'm probably buying you a Smeg mixer or something as a gift because it's on your registry.
That's right.
Or you put your bank account details in the damn invitation.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, I must still pay for my meal. Why am I here?
No, for sure.
At least feed us.
This is to me, first of all, it's the weirdest thing I've ever heard that people have to pay for food from a menu. And she obviously thought like she's getting this fancy restaurant to do it for them. But if you're going to do that, that's for your account. Imagine having to pull out your wallet. Listen, I've been to weddings where people have said they only are covering so much of the bar tab. And then after that, it, you know, you have to pay, which is, the alcohol's expensive. I can kind of understand. And some people get married, you know, when they don't have a lot of money in their early 20s or whatever.
Yes.
And that's fine. So if you say, well, you know, there's going to be wine on your table, because that's the least you can do if you're the bride or bridegroom. You put a bottle of wine on each table or whatever. I don't expect everything for free. But if you're going to make me pay for my dinner and my drinks, and I must bring you a gift, this is like I'm being extorted for your big day. And I don't like that at all.
Then what the hell did you pay for? Just the dress? That's all you paid for on your own wedding. You're supposed to be, it doesn't make sense. It, where did the lobola go? Okay, I'm sure they don't have lobola, of course, because they're having Michelin star food. Well, that people have to pay for themselves. But either way, people need to understand that you can't invite people anyway to pay for anything. And if you can't afford this wedding, go to court. Go to court and get married there. Get some witnesses to sign the papers, and that's it. Host a small and a dinner in your house.
A bring and bri, you know.
Well, Congo Chris says I bet the reception didn't even have an open bar or a sponsored bar tab limit. That is the worst of all sins. Mash is not having it, says Ayanda. Correct.
This is unacceptable. Unacceptable. I go to way too many events to arrive somewhere and have myself have to now pay for food that I didn't budget for.
Can I tell you, I went to an event probably about 3 or 4 years ago. Hey, this story, it's a bit sad, right? But it was a friend of mine, her mom passed away, sadly. So her boyfriend put like a $5,000 bar tab down for after the whole ceremony. Like, you know, everyone was upset and but no one is going near the bar, like anywhere close to it. So the problem was he put the money down, but he doesn't get it back. So I remember him coming up to us after the ceremony. Now, everyone, you know, everyone had cried their eyes out. We're all standing together. And then he comes to us without his girlfriend seeing. And he's like, guys, I've put $5,000 down. And if we don't drink, we're not getting this money back. So if you don't mind me asking, can you please go order as many drinks as possible to try and get all the money? So there we are. We are buying drinks. Well, ordering drinks, we're getting like two at a time each, and we go into the back of the hill, and we kind of just catching a fade, trying to use up the bar tab.
I think that's great.
And it's like you're trying to be upset in the moment, like for, you know, you're trying to be there for your friend, but at the same time, everyone's getting a bit bummed, and it's like it's a bit of a murky line that you have to try.
Oh, I reckon, listen, he's not going to get the money back, so you may as well drink and at least get his friend. Get stuck in here, guys. Go.
Absolutely. This was a funeral?
It was a funeral, yeah.
Oh, it's after tears. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
After tears, we get drunk and be merry.
Exactly.
Yeah, but yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
No, but I just thought it was funny because it's not really a place you want to get hammered at. If
also, I'll point out on this story, because this is a real story, obviously. We have no reason to not believe it. Greg says, charging work colleagues for a wedding dinner sounds like a money-making scheme. That makes it even worse. She's a work colleague of the bride.
Oh, yeah, it's that's worse. She's
best friends with her or whatever. So
it's an obligatory thing. Like, you have to, you're kind of showing face just to show face.
That is ridiculous.
Yeah, Max says, this is a very good point. Further, I don't have kids, but now males are having pamper parties, so I must pay for their kids' nappies. What the hell?
You know, this is a good point because I've...
This last year because I was invited to one of these things. Now, I'll just say it because there are some of my friends who listen to the show. They know this already. The people who don't, it won't be news to you that someone like me is not going to buy you fucking nappies. That's your job. You are the father. I'm not coming to drink where I probably also have to provide the drink at a party to celebrate you being a father. And I must now also bring shit diapers for your child. It's not my business. Not my business. I'm not doing it. Sorry. I do not participate in nappy parties. Rather leave me out.
I had to participate in this last year sometime, and I was actually talking to Lebang about this yesterday, and I said, you know, firstly, I know nothing about diapers, so when I had to go buy a packet, I didn't realize there were so many different ones.
Oh, please. It's like you with shampoo. You don't know which one's which.
No idea. So no. It was all new to me. I had to ask around, which is embarrassing, because I was like, I should know this stuff.
Been very, very strong on his opinions on the wedding that you have to pay for the dinner. Are you also, do you feel strongly about the nappy parties, Mash? What's your feeling on that?
Was I there when you were screwing? Was I there? Did I say go faster, Papa? Yes, inside. Pakati inside.
Well, did actually, I say that? You might have been so after last week.
Damn problem.
After last week, you might have been. You might have been at the window knocking.
I wasn't there cheering you on. Now it's my problem. The consequences of your action are not my problem. That's something I cannot stand as well. When people do stuff and then now it's our problem. Oh yeah, guys, buy nappies because I'm having a baby. Yes, congratulations on your baby. Amazing. We're happy for you. But it's a decision you made with your partner. It's none of my damn business. That's something that does, it just doesn't make sense. It is unacceptable. Well,
Marco says in the comments, now I feel absolutely terrible for having a small charge to cover the meal at our wedding. Well,
you should feel terrible. You should. That is cheap. There's varying levels of cheap, and that is the cheapest of all. A damn wedding. Yes, maybe a birthday party, you can pay for a lunch or whatever, perhaps, if your friend is struggling and you guys just want to make them feel special. But that's only if you guys set it up for the friend. You can't invite people some way. Take them out of the comfort of their own homes. We're spending petrol money to come there. We're using Uber money. And then on top of that, we still have to pay for food. We're dressing up. Some people even have the nerve to come up with a damn theme. I must now wear pink to go spend money.
Okay, wait, hold on. So how do you feel about bars that have a cap at said events? So if one of your friends are getting married.
We spoke about that. No, we don't have a problem with that. Like after the, you know, maybe they can, because you get like people who are severe alcoholics and they will go and they will drink your money.
Yes.
So you have to, with some people at some weddings, unless you are, you know, very, very generous or very, very wealthy, you have to draw the line somewhere. You have to say, all right, well, I'm going to pay up to 10,000 Rand, which is a lot of money on an alcohol tab, right? And then beyond that, you have to pay. So I don't go to weddings without my credit card. I take it just in case, but I'm not expecting to pay for the meal and for all the drinks and from the start, not have anything at the table to drink. I mean, I think that is cheap. I think Mash is right.
That is super cheap. You know, people appreciate the little things. Like, for example, I went to a movie premiere on Friday. I went to a movie premiere for a movie called Gonna Rejoe. It's a Zimbabwean movie about animal poaching, in Zimbabwe, also in northern South Africa as well. It's quite a big problem. Yeah. And at this movie premiere, they actually had vegan food. The whole menu was vegan. And I actually enjoyed this food because, first of all, I thought to myself, I don't have to pay for it. Number one.
Right.
I don't have to pay for it. Everything's catered for. At least they had booze. So I actually really enjoyed the food. You know, no matter what food you serve me, as long as I don't have to pay for it, I will enjoy it.
To be fair, with vegan food, I don't think they could sell it.
No, but listen, I don't hate vegan food. I would just prefer food with meat. But if it's free, you don't really get to decide, right? I mean, like Mash, you would, and sometimes vegan food can be very nice. I mean, my sister's a vegetarian. She makes some very nice food. I don't complain about it. But if it's my house, then I'm going to do what I want. I don't expect, you know, if you're a vegan, I'm not going to be mean and like not look, there's going to be salads and like vegetable stuff and whatever. But if you tell me you don't have any milk, you don't do any oil, you don't do any of this, if your menu is so complicated that I can't invite you to things, then I either won't invite you to things or you must bring your own.
Absolutely.
I don't think
those are the only.
I think that's rude. Because if you're really fussy, if you're incredibly fussy, like if this woman at the wedding couldn't eat anything on the menu because it was all like not to her liking, and then she demanded McDonald's, then it would be her fault. So I think that, you know, there's sometimes you have to know all the details. And in this case, I think we know enough details to know who the blame belongs to with the wedding thing. But I also think like vegan food is not the worst thing in the world. Vegetarian food is not the worst thing in the world. You can eat it. You will be fine. You will survive. It might not be your favorite thing, but it's not going to kill you. You know,
if you're not paying for it, it's fine.
Sure. Right.
If you're offering me a menu with prices on it of just vegan food, we're going to have a serious problem.
We're going to have a problem.
Yes.
And Doggo just says, I've already paid for my outfit and the amount it cost me to get to the wedding. I don't want to have to pay for the food as well. You see, again, people are agreeing with you.
No. Exactly. And if I'm going to have to pay for the food, then I have to be able to order whatever the hell I want. I have to be able to suck it out of my thumb because I was invited there. Oh, I want lobster tail with a steak and pap. I can have that because I'm paying for it. And I didn't want to be here. I could have been at home watching Love Lives Here, The Ultimatum, or Perfect Match.
But Nash, don't you have, okay, can I just ask, do you not have one or two of those friends that you'll be there for, like, even if they couldn't afford it and you just wanted to be there, right? They're like, they're such good close friends to you that you would rock up even if you had to pay for your own food.
If they can't afford it, I'll ask them, what are you doing?
And I'm talking like a best friend. You not like have a best friend that you'd be like,
I do have best friends, Ryan. But if you can't afford something, why the hell are you hosting? Why are you hosting?
Because you just want the people around. That's all.
We can go around at your home or something, plan something small. If you know that your budget, all you can afford is Sasco and butter, invite us to your house to have freaking Sasco and butter with some tea. Don't invite us somewhere to spend money.
Nah, I'm with you. I'm just checking where you draw the line, you know.
The line is not very high. The line is very low. And it's as simple as if you can't afford something, stick within your damn budget. If your budget only allows for 1, 2, 3, stick there. Don't bother us. What business do I have getting dressed up, driving all the way to freaking Westrand, and then also spending my money?
Oh, my God. All right. Well, there we go. That's Mash is having a tirade this morning, and I love it. That was fantastic. That's made my day.
What a morning.
Not my money.
All right. Listen, it is 7 o'clock. We've got to get to our interview, which I'm very excited to bring you this morning. Martha Ngoyi, who is a really, really interesting person. She's a whistleblower and a very brave corporate South African who decided to spill the beans on Lucky Montana and all the other crooks at PRASA. And she's got an interesting story, which I think will also blow your mind, because so often we hear these stories, we just see the headline. We're like, oh, whistleblower outs this bad guy or that bad girl or whatever. But we don't actually hear the story of the whistleblower. And she's paid a very heavy price for being honest, and she's paid a very heavy price for trying to get her job back. And you can understand all of this when you listen to her talk to me. So she's on next. Don't go anywhere. CliffCentral.com. Wednesday morning. CliffCentral.com.